Welcome back. So in podcast 676, I've been saying for a while that I was going to do a podcast about tax reform, and so I'm going to. This is the raft of legislation currently being promulgated by the Republican Congress we're debating off and on in between major crazy tweets and awful things that happen. We are debating this question of what constitutes tax reform. And I was going to go through the bill step by step and talk about what it will do and how it's going to affect people. And then I thought, no, I'm going to talk about what real tax reform is in podcast 676. So when it finally comes, it will probably, whether it is earlier than expected or not, will feel like it is earlier than expected, and it will last probably longer than any of us would hope. This is the cold and the snow, and that means that the furnace and the water heater are going to be working overtime. Now, in my neck of the woods, it's dropped down to about 30, 35 here in Minneapolis and St. Paul. During the day, it's, you know, 45, 50. We know that the full test of winter is below zero. So this is the question. Did you have Ryan Plumbing and Heating come out and check your water heater and your heating system for free? Because if you didn't, there's still time. Because with zero temperatures and below, your furnace and your water heater are going to be working overtime. And it could mean high heating bills. And you should ask them when they come out to educate you a little bit about efficiency and higher efficiency systems. Because when it comes to keeping all of these complex systems running right, especially these days at home or business, you want reliable service. That means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. They've been there for four generations in Frogtown, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, you can call them in 612-927-6488. Ryan goes metro-wide from St. Paul, so that means the suburbs too, whether it's Invergrove or Plymouth. Those are the two I always use, north or south, you know, Maple Grove or Burnsville. Don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488 online at ryanplumbing.com. To begin with, if I had a very soft female voice, this would sound a lot more warm and inviting. I will try not to yell. I will try not to pound. I will try not to say what I have to say with a great deal of force, because I think there's too much of that, and I think sometimes it turns certain kinds of people off, because some of the things I have to say can be controversial. But before I start, let me say that, you know, and to reinforce the principle of freedom of choice, no one has asked people what they want when it comes to tax reform. People want different things. This is what we mean when we talk about tax reform or any other legislative initiative. We very seldom talk about you have the freedom to decide whether you think this is a good idea or a bad idea. And you always have that freedom, and you always have the freedom to be not convinced or to disagree with anything anybody says, myself included. But again, my experience of this whole thing from the tax cut campaign speeches and the tax reform campaign speeches is nobody's really asked the American people what they want. And of course, different people who live in this country want different things when it comes to taxes. Some people want a better economy. If you do, you have to think about what you think will accomplish that. Some people want free stuff. They want free college. They think that single-payer healthcare is a good idea. They want things to be easy for people to get, and they want them provided as services by the government. Some people want lower corporate taxes. They say that this will make the United States more competitive and create jobs. So when somebody says tax reform, then the first thing that I think is fair to assert without too many disagreements out there among you people exercising your freedom of choice and freedom of thought is that tax reform means many different things to many different people, okay? Many people voted for Donald Trump because they think he is the antidote to the elite rich running the country. I know it's counterintuitive, but Donald Trump is pro-union, pro-American, pro-trade protection. He is a nationalist. Americans, and I put that in quote, think the president is on the right track because he's trying to fix this thing. He's trying to, quote unquote, drain the swamp. And the elites are in the way. The elites in Congress, the rich people who don't like him, the people who run the media, and so forth and so on. If they would just get out of the way and let him do what he wants, everything would be fine. Here again, one of the things that never comes up for consideration is, what about what you want? What comes to mind when you hear the words tax reform? There are two words that drive every tax debate that we've had in the last 35 years in this country, and those words are budget neutral. And they are the wrong words to have a debate about taxation. What is budget neutral? Well, this is interesting because today I thought, well, I'm going to do some searches and I'm going to find out what budget neutral actually means. And the first thing that comes up is something called fiscal neutrality. That is when revenues are equal to spending, right? Very simple. But that is not what budget neutral means. There's no real definition for budget neutral. It is something that sounds like fiscal neutrality, but budget neutral, as far as I can see, is political speak. And the question again comes, what exactly does it mean, budget neutral? Well, it means, in the parlance of Congress, that proposed programs need to be, quote, paid for with equal budget cuts somewhere else or tax increases. Paid for like government is a business, so the overall budget doesn't change. And what is government paid for? It's paid for all these different services that it provides for it. And how is the government paid for? It's paid for with taxation, and it is accomplished by something called withholding. So our employers are required by law to take money out of our paychecks and send it to the state and federal government. We get some of that money back every year after we're good boys and we file, good boys and girls, and we file a tax return. The idea is using something called a deduction, which reduces your taxable income, you then try to recoup some of the money that they have been withholding from you that you have no choice about. Sometimes, though, you end up paying more tax. So there are all kinds of little tricks that people can play to get more money in their paycheck, but then they end up owing tax at the end of the year. Nobody can understand this tax system. So we pay accountants and use software to determine what the numbers say and how much we get back or pay. This is a very expensive industry in the United States today. And if I hazard to guess that if Congress proposed a law that was as complex as the tax code and as the tax system, and required as much money to be spent by individual citizens to comply with that complex tax code, they would be laughed out of Washington, D.C. It would never pass. If that was how we did healthcare, even with the onerous problems of Obamacare in the view of some people, the tax code would make Obamacare look like, you know, a walk in the park. Listen to economist Milton Friedman explain how this all works and why nothing will ever change.
Why is it that the tax system is so complicated? Why do we have a tax system which has an almost infinite number of rules and regulations so that nobody in this room could possibly know them all? If you're a congressman, you have to engage in activities which will enable you to get reelected. One of the most important of those activities is making the tax system more complicated.
So when politicians talk about tax reform, most of the time they're either talking about tax increases to, quote, balance the budget, or they are talking about tax decreases to, quote, stimulate the economy. Democrats call this doing the right thing or helping people. Their reasoning is there's no excuse for the richest nation in the world not to be able to care for its poorest citizens. Or the wealthy in this country make so much money because of the opportunities created in the richest and greatest country in the world, it's about time that they contributed to improving the lives of everyday working Americans who are struggling, and here's four or five rich people who are happy to pay more to do that. Republicans reason taxes are too high for every working American, and we need to reduce this burden, or the highest income tax bracket already pays 80%, that's an arbitrary number, it's probably higher than that, of the tax, and we need to free up that capital to be invested in small business, the backbone of the middle class, and the biggest job creators. Or tax cuts will spur employment, so we're calling this a jobs bill. Reducing taxes on all Americans will allow capital to be invested in business, which means jobs for working Americans. And that's pretty much the script for Republicans and Democrats for the past 35 years in these tax debates. You have this push-pull situation with both wings of federal and state legislatures all either arguing they want to help people or arguing they want to help business. Both want to hand out candy to supporters so they can get reelected, as Milton Friedman so clearly illustrated. One side wants to create programs to help people. The other side wants to cut taxes to stimulate the economy. Both of them are lying through their teeth. Many of them don't even know that they're lying. They believe this stuff. And at the core of all this is this question of budget neutrality. They keep saying that things have to be budget neutral, which is a bastardization of fiscal neutrality that again says that what you take in should be equal to what you spent. And I believe fiscal neutrality applies to specific situations. It's not necessarily some sort of law or even a natural law. It's just an idea that you take in as much as you spend, and so you are then fiscally neutral. By the way, when it comes to business, this is also nonsense, because as a businessman, I do not want to be budget neutral. I want to make as much money as possible over the amount that I spend. Therefore, I maximize my profits and minimize the expenses in any way that I can. Charge more? Absolutely. Make stuff in China for pennies on the dollar? Yes. Employ legal means to avoid paying tax? Where do I sign? No business anywhere says to its board of directors, hey, what we need to do in this company is to maintain fiscal neutrality. So by God, we need to spend more on production and charge less for our product. They would say that only if they wanted to show a loss so that they would have a tax deduction. Congress is taking up something everybody supposedly voted for called tax reform. Republicans are delirious because we're going to handle this tax reform issue. And we're arguing, are they going to get it through? And how many of the elements in the House tax reform bill will the Senate pass? And, you know, we'll introduce this with great fanfare, and we'll show how much easier it's going to be to fill out your taxes with this special card, because that makes it look like a flat tax. And we're going to reduce the number of brackets, and we're going to do all these things, and we're going to refer to it as a job creation bill, and all kinds of wonderful things are promised. We're only going to have four tax brackets. Look at this really nice card. This will be make it easier for you to fill out your taxes. We're going to cut corporate taxes from 35 to 20%. We will have then the lowest tax rate in the world. We're going to give the middle class another tax cut. Get ready now. But there is a but. There's always a but. But we have to, here it comes, bend over, here it comes, pay for those tax cuts. We're going to cap what will allow you to invest in tax-deferred accounts. We're going to cap or eliminate the interest you pay on your mortgage as a deduction so that you can pay less tax. We're going to cap or eliminate the amount of state tax that you can use to reduce your income so that essentially your income will be taxed twice, once by the state that you live in and once by the federal government. Going to introduce a new word now. Get ready. This is a new word. Are you ready? That's my drum roll. Here's the new word. This is what is known as a marginal improvement in political parlance. Now, depending on your political affiliation, it's something, it's moving in the right direction. Now, people that are against that side of the political fence believe that we're moving in the wrong direction, but it's not so bad because it's a marginal change, and we might be able to even reach across the aisle and get some things that we want, and then we can use this to get elected, and then we can make marginal changes to make things better by rolling back the changes that the previous Congress made. Of course, the thing about marginal improvements is they are hardly earth-shattering because they're marginal. Hey, we didn't get a touchdown, but we moved the ball to their 30-yard line. You should be happy. Or marginal improvements are heralded as revolutionary, thus enabling present and future presidents making speeches like this.
In a moment, I'll be sitting at that desk taking up a pen and signing the most sweeping overhaul of tax code in our nation's history. To all of you here today who've worked so long and hard to see this day come, my thanks and the thanks of a nation go out to you. The journey's been long, and many said we'd never make it to the end. But as usual, the pessimists left one thing out of their calculations, the American people. They haven't made this the freest country and the mightiest economic force on this planet by shrinking from challenges. They never gave up. And after almost 3 years of commitment and hard work, one headline in the Washington Post told the whole story. The impossible became the inevitable, and the dream of America's fair share tax plan became a reality. When I sign this bill into law, America will have the lowest marginal tax rates and the most modern tax code among major industrialized nations, one that encourages risk-taking, innovation, and that old American spirit of enterprise. We'll be refueling the American growth economy with the kind of incentives that helped create record new businesses and nearly 11.7 million jobs in just 46 months. Fair and simpler for most Americans, this is a tax code designed to take us into a future of technological invention and economic achievement, one that will keep America competitive and growing into the 21st century.
A lot of the tax cut has to do with small business. And if you are in business for yourself, it's probably a small business or a medium-sized business, depending on how long you've been around. And to that end, getting payments cleared can be really a path to having better cash flow. And I'm working with a new company called Relia Fund, and I'm pretty excited about it. I already have a Relia Fund payment button up on my website. What is that all about? Well, if you have a business and you do business through your website, or you need to get payments cleared, listen up. If you're a developer and you write software for clients and you want to get paid and you want to get payments cleared, or the clients that you have want to do payment clearing on their website, listen up because this message is for you. Relia Fund is a payment processor. They clear payments. They've been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than two decades. And the best thing about Relia Fund is if you contact them either through the link on the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com, which takes you to the ReliaFund.com contact page, or call them, you will talk to a human being. They don't have long-term contracts. It is secure. Going through the process to get signed up is really easy and simple. They are technology-focused. They're great. They're working with, they have apps. They can work with you to help you do whatever you need to do. 866-243-5040, 866-243-5040, or check them out online at ReliaFund.com, or you can click on that banner at the top of the page at the Bob Davis Podcast. Again, ReliaFund.com. Republicans have been selling tax cuts across the country in state legislatures and at the federal level, and when they run for governor and presidents since Reagan. And since really a little bit before that, although Reagan was the first politician to really push the idea of less regulation and less taxes and getting the government off people's backs and giving them more money for them to make decisions about what they want to do with their money than anybody had heard in a long time. Democrats in opposition to this have pushed democratic choice, freedom, the idea that government is a good thing and that it can help people, and for a nominal increase in tax, especially from the wealthy, we can do really wonderful things. In my state, in Minnesota, There was a tax debate a while back, and all the rich people in Kenwood, which is a very Tony neighborhood in Minneapolis, and over in Crocus Hill in St. Paul, where all the rich people live, they all put signs on their front lawn that said, happy to pay more for a better Minnesota, because we're going to make things better, and I'm happy to pay more tax to get that done. In all I've described, I'm not taking sides here. I don't know which one is better. But what this is the static political battleground. It's a false battleground. It is an illusion. And it hasn't changed because it's very lucrative for politicians. Now, this might upset some listeners. Before you turn off the podcast and unsubscribe in protest, please remember, again, I'm not doing this. I'm not saying that you have to believe this. You have the freedom of choice. I am not telling you that you have to vote for this or that you have to believe this. But if you ask me what tax reform is, I would say this. There should be no corporate tax, zero. There should be no property tax, period. There should be no tax on any of our income, no tax on any savings after our death or any of our assets at any time, ever, for any reason. Government, any government, has no natural right under any concept of human rights or any concept of liberty or any concept of Western government to assess any of our money to give to someone else for their retirement or their medical care, period. I don't care what Bernie Sanders says. I don't care what anyone says. They can thunder at the top of their lungs that health care is a right, but they cannot explain to you how health care can be a human right. Retirement is not a human right. Medical care are not human rights. They do not exist in a representative republic that constitutionally guarantees liberty. Why? Because they give too much power to the government. That is why. That's one of the main reasons, but there are others. And there are better other reasons than that to support the idea of no tax as true tax reform. First of all, corporations do not pay taxes. They either pass the tax on to you as a cost so that not only are you paying your taxes, but you're also paying the taxes of the companies that you do business with in the idea that their prices are more expensive than they would be without any tax. So a corporation is a vessel. There is no reason for a corporation to pay tax because you pay the tax. You, the customer, pays the tax. But there are reasons to be a corporation. One of the reasons that people become corporations and corporations are formed is to legally avoid personal liability, especially for borrowed money, to shelter money by legally avoiding taxes. Why do they do this? Because the purpose of a company is to make more money than it spends, to return a dividend to the stockholders, even if one person holds all the stock in that corporation. And these days, it is to provide what's known as a tax shelter for its owners and investors. So corporations, and I guess to an extent, most wealthy people do not pay taxes. When they start talking about having the 39% tax bracket on people who pay, who oddly enough earn more than $1 million, Lady Gaga is not going to pay that tax because Lady Gaga has plenty of deductions and plenty of shelters to avoid paying that tax. And if they eliminate the deductions, if they eliminate the shelters, as I mentioned earlier, in an effort to simplify the tax code, which means get more money because it has to be budget neutral, they will find, you know, some very smart Harvard lawyers and CPAs to figure out how to avoid paying those taxes, right? So corporations don't pay taxes. The idea of taxing a corporation is ridiculously stupid because you and I are paying the corporate tax. So if the corporate tax is 20% or 35%, we're paying it. And if the individual tax is 20% without deductions, then you individuals are going to end up probably either breaking even, depending on the new tax code versus the old tax code, or you're going to pay more tax. And of course, you'll have to go to an accountant to figure out how you'll end up either coming ahead or falling behind when it comes to taxes. Now, I said something earlier that some people find controversial, and this is this idea that there should be no property taxes. Why? Why do I say that? Property taxes contravene our right to own property. You do not own your property because if you want to find out who really owns it, all you have to do is stop paying your property taxes, and you'll find out very quickly that they will come and they will take your property away. They will sue you and everything else, and they will force you at the literally a point of a gun to pay your property taxes. And if you don't because you're too old and you don't have any money left, and they've raised the property taxes to pay for the stadiums and the light rail and all the wonderful things, the statues and the artwork, downtown, then they will just take your property. And anybody who knows anybody in places like St. Paul, where lots of old people live, one of the reasons they put their properties up for sale is they can't afford the taxes anymore because they're quote unquote living under a fixed income. But how will we run the city, people will say, if there's no property taxes? And my response to that is exactly. My second response to that question is, it really isn't my problem. I don't really care how we run the city. I don't think we should pay property taxes because I think it contravenes the centerpiece. It contravenes the centerpiece of what a capitalistic society is supposed to be, and that is property rights. You don't have any property rights because they can take your property away from you if you don't pay your taxes. So you really don't own your property, even if you've paid off the loan to the bank, which actually owns your property, as long as you have a mortgage. And why do you have a mortgage? So you have an interest tax deduction that you can use to reduce your income. Finally, the other word I want to suggest people start using in relation to tax reform is permanent. You don't hear this question of permanent. First of all, we know that economically, when you give people a tax cut, it has to be permanent in order for it to actually have any stimulative capabilities. And I don't want to get into that in this podcast because it's really another podcast. The other thing, in order to stimulate the economy while you're cutting taxes permanently, is to permanently reduce the amount of money the government spends and keep doing that. That's a circular movement that generates growth because people have more money to spend, and it's supply-side economics. That is supply-side economics. Cutting taxes and spending more is Keynesian economics, and both will, you know, improve GDP in the short term, but in the long term, when you do that, you just have more debt and you have to raise taxes because government spending has to be paid for in some way, shape, or form. Governments can borrow money or they can tax money, and ultimately, they have to tax money in order to pay for the debt. So there's no way out when the government starts spending money. It also works in reverse. So if the government spends less money, they have to tax less. We have more. We are freer, and so on. If you want free stuff, if you want free college, if you want free medical care, if you want the rich people and the companies to pay for it, and you want to make sure that the bad people can't get guns, and you want laws to ensure that companies in America will only do business with Americans or only employ Americans, or laws that say what companies can say or do, or determine that individuals who say things that might upset people should be legally prevented from doing so, or that Google, for instance, should be regulated out of existence because we heard someplace that they helped a politician from the other side, or that YouTube should be taken down because the Russians used it to spread propaganda, or that Facebook should be, people in Facebook that run it should be put in jail and the company should be broken up because they allowed those Russians to buy Facebook ads, and so on and so on. When you demand the government intervene in these kinds of things, you get them because they're only too happy to intervene on your behalf. But what happens is you also get governments with unlimited power that do whatever they deem necessary with that power. And you have nothing to say about it because you gave them that power. If you don't like crazy people with guns, and no one does, then you say, we need to take all the guns away. But wait. You don't like it when cops shoot and kill black men or beat up women, or when politicians use their authority to do whatever they want with a female or male staffer. What are you going to do about it? So the question about taxation that you have to use when you exercise your freedom of choice on this issue is to think about and to decide what government power actually means to you, and the laws that these people you have elected continue to pass in order to get elected, as Milton Friedman said earlier. What is true tax reform? What is true reform of corruption in government? It is the permanent removal of the power of government to tax people, and to control us through taxation and the permanent removal of the power of government over our lives. The good and the bad, or the bad and the good. Because as with everything, there's good things and bad things. The bad things are really bad things. The good things sometimes are good things. But you can't have the good without the bad. You can't have the bad without the good. You can't have the good without the bad. The fiscally responsible Republicans, and I'm using that term lightly, who are talking about tax reform as a jobs creator, just passed the largest budget since the hated President Obama's stimulus-infused budget about 8 years ago, 9 years ago, 6 years ago, whenever it was, that was something around $3.7 or $8 trillion. They just passed a $4 trillion budget. People who think the president is, quote, conservative, or the Republicans in Congress are, quote, conservative, vote for Republicans who simply pledge to use government power to do the things that their voters want. And they are no different from the people who think that they're liberal voting for Democrats who do what? Who vow to use government power to do the things that they think their voters want, and so on. And this is why they all guffaw and slap each other on the back in Washington and in St. Paul and Springfield and wherever your state capital is, because they know that this is a big fat joke. The question is, what do you want, and what is the actual cost of what you want, considering the fact that whatever it is that you ask the government to do, you pay a dollar cost in terms of pricing, because all the government has is its ability to tax you for everything it wants to do, so you're going to pay for it. There's no such thing as free. There's no such thing as free college. You know, people say, well, my brother went to college and he got a free college education from the government and he's doing great. Yeah, he's going to pay for that too. He's paying for it, and his children and their children will pay for that free education in perpetuity because they spend more every year. You understand? So we're paying for these wonderful things that they have provided us. 120 years ago in this country, nobody started a business worrying about taxes and regulation for the most part. They could keep what they earned. If they were in Deadwood, South Dakota, and they decided they were going to sell shovels and tin pans so that people could pan for gold. If they were stupid enough to go up there and pan for gold, they could sell those for whatever they wanted, and nobody said they should be put in jail or they regulated the price. There was, when power companies first started in this country, there was no power regulated board that told them what they could charge for electricity and so on and so on. There were no Social Security deductions. There was no such thing as FICA. We didn't have assessments. They did not have to employ an army of accountants to avoid paying tax, and April 15th was just another day. And then along came the income tax back at the beginning of the 20th century. And what did we get for the income tax? Well, we got World War I, we got World War II, we got Korea, we got Vietnam, we got the War on Terror, we got the Federal Reserve, we got Washington, D.C. as the richest locality in the United States, we got urban rot, we got the drug war, and we got crazy people running amok with guns, despite all the laws against that kind of behavior, not to mention the fact that mass murder is illegal. So while they're changing the fine print in the tax law, giving you some marginal relief, what are we arguing about out here beyond the pale? We're arguing about the difference between socialism and capitalism. So the first thing you need to understand is the United States is not a capitalist country. It is a controlled market economy that really approaches socialism. We really are a collectivist representative tyranny in that we elect our kings, we call them presidents, and we elect our privy courts, which is the leadership in Congress, and we elect our parliament, which creates the illusion that we have some control. But the fact is that they have the legal power to do whatever they want. We give it to them, and we cheer the king when he issues executive orders fixing things that Congress won't. See, it's all a big show. None of this permanently reduces the power of government over our lives, and that is the problem. That is the source of corruption. Why do people sell drugs? And why is there such a heavy trade in drugs? Because it's against the law. And people who are willing to take the risk to go to jail or be killed can make a lot of money selling drugs. That's one example of all these laws that they've created because somebody thought it was a good idea that really have turned things in, have created more corruption and greater problems. They are corrupt when they give their money to rich guys who bought up all the land along the light rail project. Despite what you think about how great trains are, they're really an instrument for the rich guys in town to buy property next to the train lines and build tax-subsidized apartments, and they call that affordable housing. And it's worth a great deal of money to the people that are building it because it's tax-subsidized, and they will get their money out of it, and you'll be paying $1,300 a month in rent for a shithole. You know, this is the way it works. So if you want to be the world's greatest country, if you really want to be the world's economic powerhouse without equal, then what I believe we have to do is permanently reduce the power of the government over the people. This is a huge job because people need to understand we're arguing about capitalism and socialism, and it's ridiculous because we're already socialist. We're already a collectivist controlled economy, and we're never going to get back to the dynamic and dynamism of the early 20th century and the late 19th century with all the bad and good things that came from it until we figure out that over the last 100 years, the weeds have grown up around the house, and you can't just keep cutting the weeds down. You got to go through and rip out the sod and re-landscape if you want to get rid of the weeds, because we cut the weeds back every 5 or 6 years. Then somebody comes along and says, we should let them grow up. They look better that way. And then somebody comes along and says, you know, we need to cut down these weeds. And people think they're that guy is the smartest guy I've heard. And it's nonsense. Again, if you want to be the world's greatest country, if you want to be the world's greatest economic powerhouse without equal and have lots of money to spread around for people, if you want to provide opportunity for people, if you want all that, you have to permanently reduce the power of government over the people. And the first thing to do with that is to eliminate corporate and personal income taxes. That is for rich people, that is for poor people, that is for corporations and individual. That is, we need to make it legally and constitutionally impossible for them to do what they are doing to us now, which is robbing us blind. That is real tax reform. Well, one of the things about the new tax package is that there may be some penalties for companies doing foreign manufacturing. And if you are in the manufacturing business, if you have products that are being manufactured overseas, this is really, 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 really important, because if you do manufacturing overseas, you're probably hedging some of your bets, which means reshoring. And if you're doing that, if you're considering American manufacturing, remember DepotStar, D-E-P-O-T, DepotStar American Design Engineering and manufacturing right here in Minnesota. Visit their website at depotstar.com. And don't forget to have Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul come over and check your heating systems. Make sure everything's running right, especially the water heater, because they're going to be working overtime as soon as we hit the deep freeze. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Online at ryanplumbing.com. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts on iTunes and on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. You can subscribe for the RSS feed right on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. You can also hear the Bob Davis Podcasts at iTunes, Stitcher.com, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com. I'm on PodSearch.com, GooglePlay.com, and other places. So wherever you find the Bob Davis Podcast, thanks for listening and liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And thanks for your donations to Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 676.
better sweat me, baby.